Hello, all. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you're watching this episode, and welcome to the Goddess Project Podcast. Today, our episode is going to be about the Amazons. And so, of course, our episode is titled, Of Course the Amazons Exist. And so, I'm going to spend this time talking about the Amazons a little bit, of course, well, a lot. Sharing with you some of my own images from museums. So if you're listening to me on Spotify or anywhere else where you get your podcast, that's okay. You can always go over YouTube and just kind of scroll through to see some of the images. Sorry, that was. So in Greece, I'm in Corfu still in Greece, and every now and then there is a guy or a couple of guys that drive around selling things from their trucks, and they use a megaphone, you know, so I can hear it perfectly. I can't tell if you can hear it over the microphone, so hopefully you can't, but he literally just drove by my gate and I was like, so hopefully you didn't hear it. That's all right. So back to Amazons. We're going to be talking about Amazons. Most importantly, though, we are going to talk about, did they really exist? And so my answer is yes. I mean, the title is there. And also then why did we think of them as a myth for so long? And did they really lose the battles with the Greeks? Okay. So spoiler alert, they did not. Okay. But we're gonna talk about all the sort of historical data and the way that the Greeks became both obsessed with them and obsessed with conquering them, and particularly obsessed with destroying them. And this episode has come out of so many museums have pieces, pediments, because the Amazonomachy was the battles of with the Amazons was such a topic for many of the Greeks, males, of course, Greek male gods. It was such a topic to elevate or show the conquering of the Greeks, particularly over these women. And we're going to talk about what these women represented, but particularly over these women, it had sort of this double meaning, not only patriarchy, literally, where men conquer women or men conquer powerful, independent women, but also, the ways that the Greeks reassured themselves that they won their battles every time. Okay. And I've seen so many of these in pieces, of course, different pediments and on the sarcophagi and all these pieces everywhere. And they are so brutally violent that every time I see them, I think to myself, what were people thinking? What were women thinking? But what were people thinking? Like, you know, when they went to a temple or they went to different spaces and they kept being bombarded with these images of violence against women. So we're going to talk about that because I think the psychology of that, the way that the psyche is manipulated by that, I can't speak for the ancient Greeks to know whether or not they did it for sure, but certainly they were aware of of propaganda. Yeah. Before propaganda was really invented, of course, as a sort of the way that we think about it in social media and popular culture and the World War II and things like that. Propaganda was rampant among the Greeks to themselves. Yeah, to themselves. Just a little side note, actually, before or as I get ready to share my, I'm going to share my screen with you guys and my slides. One of the things that I found fascinating is I was on, as you some of you know, that I was on a cruise ship and I was doing lectures for the cruise ship, particularly around Pompeii and things like that. And one of the things that really shocked my audience, so my audience was, I would say, 99% British. 99% British. One of the things that really shocked my audience, and all the Brits were seniors, you know, retirees, retired citizens. One of the things that really shocked my audience was the fact that I mentioned how the Greeks, I mean, how the I mean, how Americans built their republic around the Romans, right? That really shocked them. There was a few of them that came to me afterwards and were like, wow, I never really thought of it that way, that the Americans built themselves as modern day Romans and that they built a, you know, kind of a modern day republic. Sorry, another guy with his motorcycle. And one of the things, the reason why I bring that up is that the Greeks in propaganda and the way that they portrayed the conquering of the Amazons and the conquering of the so-called barbarians is exactly the way that the Brits later on, you know, colonized much of the Western world and some of the Eastern world, or met much of the Eastern world too in some places. And so it's interesting. Now, some of you might be like, well, okay, Greeks, Romans sort of overlap, but not to the Greeks and Romans. Maybe the Romans didn't care so much, but the Greeks certainly saw themselves as the pinnacle of civilization, as the beginning of civilization. Everyone else was a barbarian, an outsider. And that mentality carried through the British and British colonization. And of course, because much of American culture comes out of the British colonization, or, you know, the British move to the so-called New World, that then inspired, you know, the Roman aspect of American politics. And so when I think about this, it has relevance today. It has deep, resonating relevance today, particularly around the way that men feel about women, misogyny, domestic violence, metaphorical violence, which is overcoming the independent woman, this whole movement that's happening on social media around single women who don't want to be mothers, and the whole sort of abuse that they're receiving, and the whole, what's the guy's name? What's that dude's name that talks a lot about the way men, real men, should be? Andrew something, the guy that was hiding out in my home country of Romania. Anyways, this idea, right, that we've gotten soft because we allow women to be powerful, independent, etc. And that men have gotten soft. This idea that men who cannot conquer women are soft, which is so nonsensical. But it's very much that patriarchal propaganda. You don't need to conquer women. In fact, there needs to be no conquering. There are many civilizations, and we've talked about the Cretans last time, but there are many civilizations that thrived for thousands of years without the conquering between biological sex in this case, or gender roles or things like that. So I think the Amazons are not just symbolic of this race of women, or several different cultures of women that were independent and had all of this agency in their lives, but I think that they were the initial metaphor for patriarchy conquering independent women. So we're going to go through some details about the Amazons, details that I find fascinating. And Adrienne Mayer is all over social media. I think she's on TikTok a lot. On Twitter a lot. She wrote a book literally called The Amazons. She is the expert in this field. I highly recommend picking up this book. It is quite a dense book, and she is the expert of the Amazons. In the way that I'm the Artemis expert, she's the Amazon expert, a leading expert today. And much of her work is detailed primary, secondary source, as well as geographical and chronological source. So if you want to learn from a trusted source, I highly recommend her work. Yeah. But I've put together some points, because obviously her book is quite heavy. And I don't want to do what someone else has done in a way. I think that is her place, and that is her niche, and that is her expertise. And there are others, of course. We're going to look at several other scholars. And of course, there's primary source. But I do want to We'll talk a little bit about primary source as well, because one of the things that's fascinating is that the Greeks told stories about themselves and about others. But just like every other culture on the planet, they made themselves grander than they were, and their heroes grander than they were. And, you know, it's their own, you know, the conquerors write history. And so in this case, we have to take primary source with a grain of salt. We have to be maybe literal interpreters. Yeah. So we're going to see how that works. Okay. So let's begin. So much of these images are my own images. They are, what do you call it? Images. So for example, this image I got at the Corinth Museum. And as you can see, first of all, there is this figurative way of demeaning or putting down or shaming Amazons. And one of the ways that they do this is by pulling on the hair. And so you very rarely, in fact, I can't think of one pediment or statue in which one warrior pulls the hair of another warrior. So this is a depiction of a male-female fight, that there's something about pulling hair. Usually the Amazon is on her knees or on a horse or something like that. And the male warrior, the Greek warrior, is pulling her hair or pulling her off by the hair. And this is very much a visual depiction that this is a female warrior that the males are battling. And so even just looking at this, where this warrior with a shield is pulling the hair, grabbing back the woman that is on her knees, half breast. We're going to talk about breasts in the next couple of slides. But half breast open, so it signifies that she's an Amazon. And it looks like he had a weapon in his hand. So he was probably, you know, going to chop her head off or something like that. There is not just a conquering, but there's a shaming that's happening here. So what is an Amazonomachy? So Amazonomachy really means an Amazon battle. And there were many Amazonomachies or Amazonomachies. It's really constant battles or several battles between the Amazons and the Greeks. And as you can imagine, these were popular subjects in the ancient world, right? And the Amazons refer to a nation of all female warriors, but we're going to see that there's a few different interpretations of this. What does it mean to be a nation or a tribe of all female warriors? Now, Homer, and so we have Homer and Herodotus, who are two scholars who name these women. Interestingly, though, Homer in the 8th century BCE, so almost 3,000 years ago, mentions them as Antianeirae, which are those who fight like men. Yeah. And Herodotus calls them Andractones or Andractones, which means killers of men. So we don't have in the earliest, right, in the earliest period, we don't have the word Amazon. We have a word that defines them as those who fight with men or those who kill men or men killers. Yeah. The classical Greek, so later we have this classical Greek term Amazoi. And Amazoi translates to either breastless or full-breasted. Or not touching men. Amazoi has this kind of Amazos. Amazos is breastless. And so A is without. Mazos is a variation of mastos or breast. And so because of that term, Amazoi or Amazos, early classicists, we start to have this idea that the Amazons don't have a breast, which is kind of weird. So we're going to talk a little bit about breasts in a little bit, because it goes from male killers or women who fight men, those who fight men, to this fascination with breasts, breastless, breastful, breasted. There's one that talks about not breastfed, right? So this kind of tradition. And then we have Marcus Justinius, who writes much later. And he says he's the one that first alleges that this means this whole thing with Amazonian breast. It means that they were cutting off one breast or burnt a breast in order to be able to shoot an arrow. Yeah, which of course, I mean, so it's such a silly thing to say. Fascination with breasts, men's fascination with breasts. Such a silly thing to say because number one, and there is no depiction, not one, in which an Amazon does not have a breast. Not one depiction. So that's just empirically wrong. You know, Marcus Justinus is just uneducated and untraveled, it seems. And number two, anyone who shoots an arrow, anyone who's ever shot an arrow, I've shot lots of arrow, I've done lots of archery. Many of you have done archery. You know that you don't, that the breasts have nothing to do with archery, and that you could learn to, because you're not shooting the arrow with your elbow in front of your breast. I mean, it's just silly. So anybody who was hunting, anybody who was using archery for anything, and of course the Romans have a whole archer section in the military, would have known that you don't stick your arm right in front of your boob and that your boob does not get in the way. But anyways, I digress. Yeah. So Marcus Justinus is one of the first that starts talking about this. And then we have, for example, Philostratus, who talks about, that it might have meant that they were not breastfed. And of course, Adrienne Mayer, like I said, she suggests that all of this is a false etymology. And that, of course, they had breasts. And of course, they didn't cut one off. And of course, they didn't burn one off. Yeah. But according to the scholar Lefkowitz, Amazon women were famous for hunting on horseback alongside men. They would wear men's clothing, and sometimes you see that in the depictions of the Greeks, and even fight in wars. So they were hunters and warriors, mostly while they were so-called virgins. And virgins, remember, means not married in the ancient world, not with a hymen, right? So as long as they were unmarried, so before they were married, they were young maidens, and so they would participate in military action, and they would train, and they would fight alongside men, and they would ride horses like men. And we know that there is a large population of women warriors, and we're going to talk a little bit more about it, all over the Scythian world, the Thracian world, the Black Sea area, the Balkan world, and when we go down to the Middle East and modern-day Iran, across Persia. So we're going to talk a little bit about these women warriors and how so much of that was regarded as barbarian by the Greeks. Yeah. Regarded by, what do you call it? Outsiders. Obviously, they're outsiders, but barbarian. And what's really interesting is that, in fact, Athenian women, so speaking about how women might have felt walking around and seeing these conquests of women, this was a continuous programming, right? A revalidation, not revalidation, a reinforcement for women to remember, especially Athenian women, because these pediments were all over Athens, all over. But this, remember what happens to women who dare to, number one, fight back. Number two, train, eat, clothe. So women were wearing pants. Now remember, there's a whole discussion, right, in the last 1,000 years where women were not allowed, you know, the Victorian era and all that, where women were supposedly not allowed to wear pants and all this kind of stuff. So women were wearing pants, in, you know, 3,000 years ago. Anyways, that's another little side note. But so, you know, to dress accordingly, to not be wild, to not whatever. So remember that Athenian women were trapped at home. They had to stay home. They were not even allowed to leave the compound unless they were fully covered, or if they were wealthy, they were carried around in these kind of boxes, right? In these, what do they call them? Litters, which is a weird name for them in English. Or horse and bear, or horse and buggy, or whatever, which depends how much wealth you had. So imagine Athenian women seeing this representation of what happens to women who step outside of the norm. And in fact, one could argue that the Amazons were even more liberated than Spartan women. right? Because, so Spartan women, of course, were very strong. So compared to Athenian women, Spartan women are the next level, right? They lived more liberal lives. They could own property. They had communal state guardianship of the children. They exercised, all of that. But the one thing that Spartan women did not do was that they did not go to war, right? So they were more like a strong breeding body. Let's put it that way. They were well-fed, well-trained, some well-educated, given financial independence, all of that. But their purpose was caregiver, caretaker. So caregiver of the children that they birthed. So they had to birth strong male children, of course, and strong female children. And then they were caretaker of the space while the men were at war. Amazons, arguably, are an independent tribe. Not only do they not answer to men, they have their own army. They do what they want. There is no law that holds them in place. And often they were nomadic tribes. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Scythian tribes, which is a nomadic tribe. But first, let's talk a little bit about the myth. Okay, what is the myth that is perpetrated? Okay, so what did the Greeks tell themselves about the Amazons? So according to the Greeks, so we're talking Herodotus, we're talking Homer, we're talking Diodorus, we're talking all the other primary sources, and even Pausanias, as you'll see later on. They told themselves that the Amazons were a race of female warriors descended from Ares, of course, the god of war. They were skilled at hunting, riding, archery, warfare. They had to be in order to fight the so-called heroes of Greece. They worshipped Ares and Artemis. So as many of you know, I'm writing a book on Artemis of Ephesus. And absolutely one of the foundational myths of Ephesus is that the Amazons who arrived there or who were there or who went through there, there's lots of versions. So we'll talk about that in the book, establish a temple of Artemis or an original temple of Artemis that eventually grew into the Artemision, which was one of the largest seven wonders of the ancient world. And their geographic locations were notably associated with Scythia and Asia Minor. So in Greek narratives or Greek epic narratives, the Amazons were non-Greek heroic figures. So they were seen in many ways as equal to the heroes because they had to be, or else what is the point of battle? That challenged the strength and masculinity of the Greek heroes. So lots of heroes made their name by conquering a Amazon. And today, and after the podcast, we're going to talk about three Amazon queens that were conquered, and we're going to talk about them in detail. But the heroes that made their name by conquering an Amazon queen were men like Achilles, Bellerophon, Heracles, Theseus, and other Athenians. And I'm going to talk a little bit about three heroes because they are the worst. But also because it's important to note how men made their name by defeating women. Yeah. In Homer, King Priam first talks about Amazons when he recounts a battle from his youth. So he says, according to Homer in the Iliad, he says, "I looked on the Phrygian men with their swarming horses, so many of them. The people of Otreus and godlike Mygdon, whose camp was spread at that time along the banks of the Sangarios. And I myself, a helper in war, was marshal among them on that day when the Amazon women came, men's equals." Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit about how the Amazons came to the help of Troy, that they brought their military to help Troy fight the Greeks. And of course, unpredictably, Troy and the Amazons were conquered. Of course, for example, when we talk about Bellerophon, and I don't think that people talk enough about Bellerophon, perhaps we'll talk about him one day. Anyways, Bellerophon is actually the one who captured and tamed the horse Pegasus. I know in Clash of the Titans, we have Perseus who does that to Pegasus, but it's Bellerophon who, like I said, is a little talked about hero. Anyways, he made his name because he slaughtered the Amazons who fight men in battle. Yay. Yeah. They also the Amazons play a role in the saga of Heracles, and we're going to talk about that with Hippolyta. And of course, we're going to talk about Theseus and all that kind of stuff. One of the things that Herodotus, for example, especially focuses on in his book is the way that the Greeks defeated the Amazons and took them captive in Scythia, by the North Black Sea. And he writes this whole thing about how they were defeated. Okay, Herodotus, 8th century BCE. He says, "The Amazons had nothing except their weapons and their horses and got their living by hunting and taking bounty." They kind of sound like early Norse or so-called Viking tribes, yeah? Eventually, they intermarried with the Scythians. So Herodotus is trying to tell us that they weren't actually Scythians, but that they were dropped there or landed there with the Greeks, and they eventually intermarried. Now, there are other historians who say that the Amazons were already there, that they come from Scythia and the Black Sea, but okay. He notes, Herodotus, "From then forward, the women of the Sauromatae practiced their ancient way of living, going out regularly on horseback to the chase, both in the company of men and apart from them, and going to war regularly, and wearing the same dress as the men," so they wear pants. "As regards to marriages, their rule is this, that no maiden is married until she has slain a man of their enemy." Some sources say she has to slay 3 men. Okay. "And some of them even grow old and die before they are married." So basically they don't want to get married because they are not able to fulfill the requirement of the law, or because they don't want to get married, Herodotus. Yeah. Another sort of ancient source that couldn't fathom the idea that strong, independent, powerful women could take men as lovers, but didn't have to marry anyone. Yeah. Yeah. So you can only imagine how many stories about the Amazons or how many of their myths were created to engage men, but also hold them up. Yeah. So, talking about breasts, I think we've talked a little bit about breasts and not breasts. This idea, of course, comes out of that translation, like I said, of the word Amazon. So we have no depictions of Amazons with fewer than 2 breasts. We have several depictions. We have actually many depictions of Amazons, like I said, in lots of art. Here in this image, you see one of the most popular statues of Amazons. They're also, after that, and here you see an Amazon on a horse, and we see them a lot on vases as well. Lots and lots of ancient Greek from red figure vases and on, lots of vases that have an Amazon either on them by herself, or she is being defeated by some Greek hero on there as well. And then, so what I'm saying is that we have enough images to say with certainty that none of them cut off their breasts. The other mystery about the Amazons, which is fascinating, that sort of becomes legend. It's again rumored and then becomes legend. It's propaganda. It's this idea that they didn't want to have any male children, and that if they got pregnant, so they would go out. There's lots of these stories that they would go out into the villages or seduce men, or attack men and assault men. And then they would get pregnant. They'd pregnate themselves. And then if the baby was a boy, that they would somehow either throw him out, or go and give him back to the village, and that they only kept the girl babies. Again, this is pure fiction, pure fiction. Now, there is some historical data that says that there were warrior women's groups that were independently women only. What I mean by that is that they traveled, fought, lived, only women. But you don't, I don't even know what to say sometimes. You don't have to go through the process of birthing to recruit women warriors. I mean, you can imagine that in the ancient world, so imagine you have a group of let's say 100 women warriors, okay? And they're a tribe and they go off and they pillage and they fight, they do whatever they want. They live how they want, they live by their own rules. It's a dream. These women, for these women to get pregnant is already, right? Because, you know, you don't get pregnant on the first time, which means you have to go at this for a little bit and hope that you get pregnant. Then to carry the baby, so 9 months of a battling warrior tribe, 9 months, you've got, let's say, 10 women pregnant, just kind of walking around with you. Are they riding on horseback? Maybe. And then the birthing of this, maybe you actually might need more than 10 women. You might need 20 women to make up enough of your forts. Then the birthing of this process, so let's say half of these children or two-thirds of these children are born alive. So that's, let's say we got 20 women pregnant, that's 15. Half of these children are boys. So you take back 7, you throw them out, or you take them back to the village. And then you keep 7 girls. So out of 20 pregnancies, you lost some women in the pregnancy. You lost some babies and you've got 7 baby girls. And now you're going to spend 18 years, at least 14 years. Okay, at least 12 years. Watching 7 toddlers, caring for 7. I mean, it is silly when you start to break it down practically. When you could literally just go into any village and ask for volunteers, because you can guarantee there'll be at least 7 girls or women in that village that feel, you know, disenfranchised, that feel that are abused, that are not getting any, whatever, that will volunteer to train and fight in the tribe. So what I'm saying is these rumors, which make it into popular fiction, which make it into a film, which then make it into sort of, oh yes, you know, when they did this, it almost becomes like the pseudo fact. You know, people tell me all the time, oh, you know, yeah, you know about Amazons, right? And I'm like, yes. And they're like, oh, you know, they used to go into the village and just have sex with whoever. And then I'm like, no, just think about what that would take to raise these girls, when you could just ask for volunteers and there would be a ton of them. And because you don't have to cut off a breast, you just have to train, right? Think about all the women, even the Athenian women, not that the Amazons conquered Athens, but even the Athenian women, think about the recruiting of how many Athenian, think about how many slaves, women slaves would have been in these places that would have gladly joined the Amazons, learned to train themselves. And fought. Yeah. So hopefully after this podcast, that whole idea of cutting off the breast is now not real for you anymore. And the idea that they went in and that they seduced men and blah, 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 and they threw away male children is now also dispelled for you. Yeah. So let's go briefly over the heroes who kill women. Heroic killers of women. So I said Theseus, Achilles, Heracles. These are the three that I really, really do not like. And in the order that I dislike them, yeah, we're going to talk about them. So I dislike Theseus in a way that is, I would say I dislike Theseus even more than I dislike Apollo. Okay. Yes, that badly, my friends. Yes. And then Heracles, I'm feeling a little more sympathetic towards him. But still, doofus. And Achilles, who I'm torn about because, yeah, again, he's a complicated figure, but you know, he ain't no hero. So these three men made their names particularly, or made part of their heroic names. They did other things. They killed other people, you know, not just women, but particularly, they had to, almost like they had to kill Amazons. So they had to kill women, but women who were worthy of a fight. So of course they killed lots of women, like their militaries killed, or their, you know, Heracles kills his whole family. You know, he kills his own children. He kills lots of people, but he kills lots of female monsters and things like that. But that's just part of everyday warfare back, you know, in these stories for these storytellers. And so killing an Amazon or overcoming or conquering an Amazon was one of those like check marks of like getting your hero degree. Yeah. So Theseus is very famous. And we'll talk about this later on and after the podcast about Antiope and Hippolyta. So Theseus is very famous for accompanying Heracles on his ninth labor, and he either elopes or abducts Antiope. And in after the podcast, I'm going to show you a statue from the Museum of Eritrea that I've never seen before, in which Theseus is abducting Antiope. Antiope is either Hippolyta's sister or Hippolyta herself. Again, we'll go into more of that detail later. She's taken by Theseus to Athens. And there's this fantastic story that the Amazons themselves invaded Athens, or invaded Greece, certainly, resulting in this famous legendary Attic War in order to take back Hippolyta that Theseus stole. And of course, this leads to this ends in their defeat. They're defeated, blah, 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 blah. So the kidnapping of by Theseus of Antiope is the most popular topic for any of the Amazonomachies. And they are the topic for all of the pediments, so many of the pediments. And there's lots of scenes of abduction, particularly of Theseus. So she is, Antiope is seen as an Amazonian queen. And unfortunately, the Amazons that come into Greece to take back their queen end up losing. And of course, Theseus emerges victorious. And this particular legend symbolizes Greek dominance over the perceived chaos and barbarism represented by the Amazon. So again, it's this idea that rationality takes over hysteria, that thinking philosophical men, patriarchal men take over matriarchy or conquer wild women, this idea. Yeah. And then we have Heracles. Heracles, so during his ninth labor, he was tasked with, by Eurystheus, he was tasked to retrieve the golden or the royal girdle of the Amazon queen Hippolyta. And so this girdle was given to her by Ares, and it was a symbol of her power, particularly her warrior power. And so Heracles, for his ninth labor, is tasked with going and conquering her, taking the girdle, retrieving the girdle. And, okay, we're told that he initially went there to negotiate for the girdle. But due to some kind of misunderstanding that is incited by Hera, so again, another bad woman, this leads to a battle in which the Amazons and Hippolyta are killed. Hippolyta's killed by Heracles, and of course, the Amazons are killed by the other Greeks that are coming with Heracles here. And of course, Heracles takes the belt and he completes this labor. So again, another episode in which Greek heroism is established by the subjugation of powerful women. And lastly, we have the most messed up one. And we'll talk about it in more detail in after the podcast. But we're talking about Achilles and Penthesilea, yes. So Penthesilea is the queen of the Amazons that comes to the aid of the Trojans, right? So she comes to Troy, she's got her own military, etc. And Achilles goes out to fight her and he kills her. Okay, he overcomes her, he kills her, blah, blah, blah. But according to some versions of the myth, as he's killing her or holding her dead body, and I'm going to show you in after the podcast, I'm going to show you a statue from a museum that is not yet published. So this is why I like to keep it in the Patreon side, which is sort of a private space, more or less, a supporter space, of Achilles holding the dead body or the dying body of Penthesilea. And he's struck by her beauty and he falls in love with her. In the moment, he falls in love with her and he is struck with profound sorrow and admiration upon her death. I mean, are we kidding? Are we kidding? So this encounter highlights the Amazons' valor, their beauty, their strength, their honor. But ultimately, they are defeated at the hands of the Greeks. So what I'm saying to you all is that they have to be worthy of conquering. And they were. But let me tell you, they were not really conquered. But in stories, in the legends, in the pediments, in the depictions, those who conquer get to build. Yeah. So the depiction of Amazon battles become common. Late antique to post-classical architectural sculpture shows them everywhere. There are tons. So Apollo at Eretria, the Temple of Apollo at Eretria has a pediment. The Athenian treasury at Delphi has a pediment. The Hephaestium in Athens had a pediment. The Temple of Zeus at Olympia had a pediment. The Temple of Apollo at Pasai, of which this is the pediment right here, which is up in the mountains. The mausoleum at Halicarnassus. And even the temple, the Artemis Temple in Magnesia, although I'd like to see that pediment to see how that's depicted. Because again, Artemis is the goddess of the Amazons, and I have a feeling that pediment probably looks a little bit different, but I have not found any pictures of it yet. So in my search with Artemis mapping of the temples, I'm sure that I'll find it, and at some point I'll share that with you. What's really fascinating about much of these depictions was that after the Persian Wars, these battle scenes gained greater and greater significance. And many of the Persian warriors were feminized, were made to look like feminized Amazons. And there are two reasons for that. Number one, in the Persian army did recruit women warriors. They did allow women to become warriors, women to be part of the military, and women to fight. So after the Persian Wars, the Greeks began depicting this Amazonomachies more and more and more in propaganda for their defending not just the Amazons, but also the Persians. And they feminized the Persians to demean them in the same way that the battle scenes with the Amazons are demeaning. Okay, so this is very much what happens in colonized America to the Native Americans. The Native American men, because they had long hair and because they weren't, you know, who knows, particularly bulked up, and because the conquerors were the only ones to tell the story, feminized the indigenous men in America, and in fact, in Canada, Australia, anywhere, right? Feminized these men, even though these are warrior men, okay? Riding horses, you know, without saddles and using arrows skillfully and all this kind of stuff, but feminize them as a way to demean them. So what I'm saying here is, and you already know, I mean, it's not a shock to you, that feminization of men is a tool to keep men in check in patriarchy, to keep men subjugated in patriarchy. That is, you must behave in this way to be a man. Any other ways of being a man are unacceptable. In the case of the Greeks, they're barbaric, they're outsider, they're wild, they're weak, 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 weak. They're soft and weak. Those are two things you don't want to call a man, right? So this is as old as 3,000 years old. It's not the norm. It's not the norm. Patriarchy is not the norm of our system. It is just the most recent system that we have, okay? So some people will be like, well, this is the way it always was, men, women, blah, 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 or how this all meant. No, 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 no. Okay. There are many other systems of existence in human history. This one is only about, I don't know, 3,000 years old, 5,000 years old at best. Imagine we've been on this planet for 100,000, 200,000 years, and it's just the last 5,000 where we have lived in patriarchy. And even then, it really wasn't firm patriarchy until about 3,000 years ago when the Greeks really arrived, you know what I mean? And really established themselves. And the Romans really made it even worse and so on and so on. So this is not a natural way for us to exist. It is just a system like capitalism, like communism, like feudalism, like all the systems that is crumbling now and will crumble and a new system will emerge. And as you all know, who watch this episodes with me, matriarchy is emerging. Matriarchy is the way forward. And if you haven't joined my Goddess Wisdom workshops through the Goddess Artemis Center, we talk a lot about matriarchy on there. And we're going to continue to do so in the free monthly workshops that we do. So matriarchy, in short, is not a reversal of patriarchy. It is a whole system. Anyways, that's a story for another day. Yeah. But patriarchy is not a natural order. It's just a system that was successful for a while and is now crumbling. So the conquerors did get to write the story, but just like every other conqueror in the patriarchal system, all of it is crumbling. History is revealing to us more and more data, more and more research. We are uncovering more things all the time. And so the way that patriarchy has posed its propaganda for us is now coming apart. And that's exciting because it's not working for any of us. It's not, well, it's working for the 1%ers. Yay for them. Okay. But it's not working for any of us. It's not working for many of us. And it's time that it's gone. Yeah. So thank you for coming to my little rant. Moving on. Oh, Athena, I wanted to touch upon Athena because another paradox. So I don't want this to be 2 hours. I'm so sorry, you guys. I try to stay at an hour, but sometimes I get a little sidetracked. So let's talk just briefly about Athena. I'm going to do a whole podcast on her. Two things. Last time, I can't remember on what it was on, if it was a shorts or one of my last episodes, somebody made a comment that, oh, I think it was on one of my Lilith episodes. Somebody had made a comment that since Eve is created by a man from man's rib and a male god, blah, 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 so is Athena. And so I have a whole TikTok set aside episode, a little short, where I talk about the fact that that is not the case, that Athena has a mother and that Zeus just swallows her. And then, of course, she jumps out of his head. Hephaestus cracks his head open and she comes out of his head fully armed in her armor. But, and this is maybe something I will touch upon in the Athena episode and in one of my Athena courses through the center. Athena is an archaic goddess of wisdom and knowledge, which is why she still maintains the snake, which is why she has the head of Medusa on her chest. Long story. We'll talk about that another time. And I think I touch on that in my Medusa episode. So if you're interested in that, you can watch the Medusa episode. Athena is an archaic goddess. What I mean by that is she predates the Greeks, a goddess of wisdom, a goddess of knowledge, a goddess of fairness, sometimes a goddess of weaving and spiders, things like that. Lots of overlap there. When the Athenians established themselves as an empire, as a powerhouse, et cetera, they're building their legend, they're building their mythology, their origin stories. And they have that origin story of Poseidon and Athena fighting over the city of Athens and which one of them wins to be called, for Athens to be called, whatever, to be named. And of course, because it's Athens, you already know that Athena wins. She becomes, through this long process of changing and adapting her into patriarchy, she becomes a goddess of war, a goddess of battle, a goddess representing men. And if you of course read Asclepius's work, she becomes the, not Asclepius, sorry, Aeschylus's work. She becomes the judge and jury. She sides with men all the time. And in fact, according to Aeschylus, the playwright, she says, "I have no mother." The playwright puts the words in her mouth. Yeah. And that is sort of taken up, becomes like a trend. And so she is often viewed as having no mother, but that's not true. She has a mother. The reason why they do that is to adapt her more and more and more into an androgynous figure, more and more into a sort of masculine figure, and more on the side of men. And nothing, I think, makes it more clear that Athena is a male or patriarchal supporter than the fact that on her shield, which you see here, so the gold aspect of the shield here is one of my pictures that I took at the Royal Ontario Museum. It's a replica, of course. But on her shield, not only does she have the head of Medusa, which, like I said, is a long story of taking over the wild women, the independence of women, the protection of the fearsome, anyways. But on her shield, she has the scenes of an Amazon Amaki. Okay. And so we see how powerful this image really is to the Greek psyche. So this is on the shield of Athena Parthenos. It was sculpted by Phidias. There's lots of copies, lots and lots of copies, and depicts the fallen Amazons. Yeah. And Athena Parthenos, of course, was this massive statue inside the Parthenon, which is now lost, of course. And it had this shield. So the reason why I say that, and there's some in the background here, different copies of the shield itself, but I think this gold one is probably one of the best copies. And there's some designs, as you can see here. So if you're just listening to me, feel free to go over to YouTube anytime. No rush. Or you can just Google Athena Parthenos shield. They're all the same, you know. So center is the Medusa, the Gorgon head. And then all around it is images of violence against women, women being conquered, women being killed, women being beaten down. Now, I'm not saying this to say that these are victims. I've just talked to you about how these are warriors and equal to the men. But the uneven conquest depicted here and the violence depicted here is very clearly sending a dual or triple message at this point. Number one, of course, men are stronger than even the strongest women. Number two, this is the epitome of Greece. Greece conquers all, including the barbaric women or the so-called feminized Persians in the Greek mind. Number three, the very female goddess that is the protector of Athens carries a reminder to women, to the Greeks, to everyone of this conquering, of this so-called heroic battles or heroic winning on her shield, on the largest shield in the largest place in the main city of Greece. Okay, so there is, and my title for this slide is Et tu, Athena, right? Very much based on Et tu, Brute, which is the Shakespearean quote for Brutus slaying Caesar, stabbing Caesar in the back. And this, and again, I have this weird relationship with Athena because I know so much of this is manipulated by men, but it's very, very difficult for me to, I don't know, form a connection with this divinity because of the way that she's been portrayed. In fact, there is only one statue that I found, and I'll post it on my Instagram. Maybe I'll even post a short of it. There's only one statue that I found at the Corinth Museum, where it's Athena without any shield and without any Medusa head and without anything, and she is holding an owl. And that was the one of the very few times that I've ever really connected to this goddess, because it really depicted her original purpose, her true self. Yeah. And so I'm working on it. Yeah. But certainly for the Greeks, imagine that double, triple layer of meaning that you've got here visually representing. So this sort of this propaganda, constant. So the symbolism of the Amazon Amaki. I think I've been talking about the symbolism of the Amazon Amaki this whole episode. But I thought I would share with you some of the interpretations of other scholars. So for example, according to scholar Bruno Snell, they say, for the Greeks, the Titanomachy and the battle against the giants remained symbols of their victory, which their own world had won over a strange universe. However, the battles against the Amazons and the Centaurs, they continued to signalize the Greek conquest of everything barbarous, of all monstrosity, and of all grossness. Yeah. So lots and lots and lots of meaning. The Greeks had many depictions in which they conquered, but this particular was conquering the barbarian, the monstrosity, the grossness. In Quintus Smyrnaeus's Fall of Troy, he has the Amazon queen Penthesilea, who fought in Troy, like we said. She says, right? So he's writing, this is a historical fiction novel. And she says in that battle, not in strength were we inferior to men. The same our eyes, our limbs the same, one common light we see, one air we breathe. Nor different is the food we eat. What then denied to us has heaven or man bestowed? So it's basically the same, the classic Shakespearean quote, if you prick us, do we not bleed? It's basically the same idea in The Fall of Troy, which is a modern historical fiction. It's not ancient. But it's this idea that we are equal to you. We are equal to you in every way, in every way. So why are we denied equal rights? Yeah. Another scholar, Jocene Bloch, for example, suggests that the Amazonomachy provides two contexts for defining the Greek hero. Either the Amazons are a disaster from which the hero saves the country, like a monster, like all the female monsters I've done so many episodes on, or they express the hero's rejection of human sexuality in marriage and procreation. So during the 5th century BCE, like I said, the Persians who invaded Greece led to all of these allegorical depictions of Persians as centaurs or feminized Amazons in Greek art. So there's this rejection of human sexuality because the Amazons themselves are depicted as warriors to be slain, but also monsters, outsiders. What's the word I'm looking for? Others. They're being very much othered in this sort of, and they're purposely sexualized and non-sexualized, right? It's very clear that they're women because that makes them something to look at, something different, but also that they're not strong enough to defeat men, right? As we've been talking about. So very, very, the clear symbolism of Amazonomachies is this conflict between patriarchal Greek civilization and anything foreign or anything what we would call a gender transgressive woman. By that I mean any woman that would have seen transgressing the role dictated by the patriarchy to her. And in this case, riding horses, being outside, hunting, blah, blah, all of that. All of that. And in fact, just being outside, right, was something that transgressed Greek patriarchy. And so the defeats of that, like we've said, is a continued example of how the Greeks defeated those kinds of women and reinforcing patriarchy. Now, were the Amazons real? So we're getting to the good stuff. I have on here, for those of you listening, at least four different articles that talk about the truth behind the myths of Amazon with Bethany Hughes, the discoveries that show warrior women's were real by Derek Hawkins. National Geographic had an article called The Fierce Amazons Were More Than Just a Myth. They were real. And then Amanda Foreman writes, the Amazons, is there any doubt? Is there any truth to the myth? Yeah. So Amazons were absolutely, absolutely real. And just a couple of days ago, there was an article going around in the Greek Reporter that, again, Bethany Hughes is interviewed there. And there is more and more and more and more evidence that Amazons are real, and that they probably came from the civilization that expanded around the Black Sea. And they're often referred to now in modern archaeology as Scythian nomad horsewomen. Or we found lots of warrior women in the Scythian Kurgans. Lots of archaeology is finding horsewomen that are buried, sometimes with their horses. For example, excavations have uncovered over 1,000 tombs of tribes like the Sakis Scythians. 300 of the burials are of armed women warriors. Okay, so I thought that I would also go over some of the key archaeological discoveries. For example, this one in Tuva, Siberia. So in 1988, this tomb was discovered, and it was thought to be a boy warrior, a mummified remains of a boy warrior. And then it has been forensically confirmed that this was a girl not yet 14 years old. She has a leather cap, so very much this idea of the Phrygian cap, possibly shirt and trousers. Much of it is decayed. Her outer garment is a long double-breasted patchwork coat made of fur from a rodent. And she's, more significantly, she was armed with an axe, a bow, a selection of arrows made of bronze, bone, and wood. And so she is suspected to be one of the female Scythian warriors who was possibly a legendary or part of the legendary Amazons. So that's one. I've mentioned the Kurgans in the Eurasian steppe. So lots and lots of burials found there. Like I said, about 300 of them out of the 1,000 are warrior women. The Pokrovka Cemetery in 1994. There were graves there with weapons, horse gear, and women. So when warriors often buried with their horse and their weapons, I mean, that's pretty clear. And we're finding more and more burials. Additionally, the Sarmatian and Sarmatian burial sites also have yielded evidence that women were buried with weapons. And this suggests that they were not just warriors, but also part of this warrior nomadic tribe. So there can really be no doubt that the Amazons, so the Amazoi of the Greeks, or that the Greeks talk about, particularly when Herodotus and Homer are talking about men killers and killers of men, there can be no doubt that those figures are based on real life figures. And we are told that by these primary sources that they came in and that they took on Greece at some point, right? In the early 8th century, or perhaps even before Homer and Herodotus's time. An argument has been made that these groups of women had a lifestyle that was being colonized by the expanding Hellenics, the Greeks, and that they fought back against patriarchy, that they fought back against becoming Athenian women stuck in their homes, and that they fought back against enslavement, patriarchy. Okay. And so in many ways, and this argument is starting to build more and more. Adrian Mayer talks about because it's very clear, I mean, it's very logical that independent warrior women, nomadic warrior women tribes, or women that participated in the military and other groups, were not the kind of women that would then become a housewife for an Athenian. You know what I mean? And so it's not a far-fetched to imagine that these women, certainly all the women, but particularly these women, saw the changes that were happening or coming for women as the Greek or the Hellenic civilization started to expand north into the Black Sea region and even further south into the Middle East, right? The lower Mediterranean, the Anatolia, right? All of those areas in which women had held power. So like I said, patriarchy is not a natural order. It's just a system that became popular and eventually became the norm and now it's fallen apart. So it's logical that these women who are used to fighting and like Homer says, killers of men, fighting men, would have taken up arms to defend their rights, to defend their spaces, but also would have, as many military cultures, would have come into Greece and other trying to push back against their continued expansion. And there is lots of data and research showing that actually they did not lose, that they held back the Greeks, that they pushed back against the Greeks, and that they may have been part of the reason why the Greeks did not so easily expand north or into the Middle East. So their influence did, lots of influence all over. But the Amazons or would have been part of that holding back the tide of the Greeks. Now, Herodotus might have been onto something, that eventually the warrior women may have settled in different towns, just like all the other, lots of conquering and warrior cultures, certainly nomadic cultures sometimes establish themselves or settle down somewhere. And they got married and had children. And so what I mean to say by that is that the concept, the popularity of these warrior horsewomen may have sort of slowed down, right? As the Greek Hellenization of all of that part of the world increased. But even today, in these areas, and northern, you know, North Asia, certainly Northern Europe, and certainly up in the Slavic Eastern Europe, Northeastern Europe, the Mongols, other areas of the world, we have women who continue to practice not only horseback riding, of course, but warrior hunting horseback riding. Yeah. Sometimes it's a sport, as you've seen some of the women that ride horses and shoot arrows, which is a fascinating sport. But some of that culture and some of that history remains. Now, I'm trying to think of how to say that right. So in that way, I would say they weren't defeated, but they became myth and legend, you know, they sort of assimilated, oh, maybe that's a better word. They assimilated, they acculturated into, you know, the last 3,000 years of history. But I don't want you to think that these battle representations are accurate. They are the imagination of the sculptors and then repeated over and recycled over and over again. What I mean is that not all Amazons died in battle. In fact, many of them did not die in battle. Not all Amazons lost many, many, just like any other war or battle, many died on both sides. And I suppose, romantically, poetically speaking, their legends frightened and inspired the Greeks in such a way that it forced them to continually depict and write about them. And that led to us knowing about them. And that led to us doing historical analysis, archaeology, digging, all that kind of stuff. And that led to us finding these warrior women graves, putting these things together. And here we are today talking about these warrior women. And so that then leads us to take up power from, to inspiration from these women that, like I said before, patriarchy and so-called binary gender roles, which the Greeks loved, you know, this duality, are not natural, are not are not set in stone, are not rigorous, and that in fact, men and women, and every sort of identity of men and women, and depiction and interpretation identification of self as within that range, is what I mean, is all humans can be anything that they want to be. There's no, I'm saying this too long, but it's basically there's no parameters, right? Based on your biology is what I'm saying. That means you're a woman or a man or whatever you are biologically, you can be a warrior, you can ride a horse. And they've been doing that since the beginning of time, I guess is what I'm saying is, yeah. Sorry. I'm imagining the image, right, of women and men riding together, hunting together, doing all these things together, but trying to put that into words. And I'm imagining women and men dressing however they want and experiencing their bodies and their selves and their identities however they want. And I'm imagining the ancient world, based on all the data that has been collected, to be a much more liberating space, albeit also violent and also problematic in some ways. So please don't, I'm not imagining a utopia. But in many ways, the ways that the ancients lived, are the same way that we live today. That is, some people conform to something. Some people don't want to conform to something. Some people are open to all the things. Some people are not. So, you know, the human existence remains similar today as it was, you know, 3,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago, perhaps even 10,000 years ago. Who knows? So that, my friends, is the conclusion to the Amazonarchy. As I said, if you are one of my Patreon supporters, please go to the Patreon page. I will upload the three Amazon queens, which we're going to talk about in detail, Penthesilea, Hippolyta, and Antiope. And I'm going to show you a couple of statues that I found in museums. For those of you that are not on Patreon, that's all right. You know, it's no problem at all. I hope that this was an entertaining and interesting episode. And I hope that you think about Amazons a little bit differently now than you did at the beginning of the episode. And if that's the case, then I did my job. And I'm really, really glad that we had this opportunity. And I'm really thankful that you watched this entire episode and that you subscribe. And as many of you know, I'm on this mapping trip, this project for the Temples of Artemis. So please share the podcast. We reached 2,000 subscribers today. I hope to one day have some form of passive income from YouTube, because that will allow me to continue my research, to make more podcasts. You know how it goes. So if you know someone that might enjoy this podcast, please share it with them and let them know. And otherwise, I will see you in 2 weeks for our next episode. I haven't decided what it is yet. I have three options, but I don't want to tell you yet, just in case. Very, very exciting stuff still to come. So thank you. I hope that you have a wonderful, wonderful day, a wonderful afternoon, evening, whenever you're listening or watching to this. And I will see you all next time. Have a fantastic, fantastic day.